very full introduction, and I'm very conscious that I'm amongst a peer group here, so that I'm really looking forward to the discussion. There's a lot of work out in this room, starting with my own table, so I'm very conscious of that. Jane mentioned already in his introduction too about SMEs and growth. It is quite frightening that we might have 2.2 million businesses in Australia, but we lose about 270,000 of those each year. And thank God we create nearly the same number or more each year as well. So there's a huge churn around about 13% per annum in the companies in Australia. The more frightening thing to me is that the average profitability of all our companies in Australia, ranging from the tiniest to the biggest, has not changed over the last 35 years. The average return on shareholder funds has never moved beyond 3.8% average over the last 35 years. So we're not, there's something we're missing entirely in trying to make companies profitable, which is one of the reasons why I think they start cheating. Because then they're going to be the door to either tracing back to the corner and then achieving it, it's obviously in the bank. So that's why I started with the institute, because we've got to try and keep companies out to be successful and to be more competitive. And after that, I should have begun by saying, first of all, thank you very much to Rekha and to Lee for your use of professional support and giving that to you on the platform. And thank you certainly to the sponsors, including Boeing, which is with the city and the Gold Owl. And above all, thanks for coming here as delegates today. Now, what am I going to try and do over the next 2 hours? 20 minutes, I think. I know somebody's going to stand the other cards soon in a moment, but I'm going to talk just about four areas. I'm going to move very quickly. They're going to be snapshots rather than long, deep, involving comments. And if you want to copy, you're very welcome. Either it's a soft copy or a hard copy, it's fine by me. I want to start very quickly by putting the current economic age we are in, which still is loosely called post-industrial age, which is what you get a name in the Nobel Court. Americans originally called this new age the infotronics age, which is the importance of information and electronics underpinning many of the industries in the economy, and I still like that term. It doesn't fully describe what this new age is about, probably at the moment, but it does highlight the underpinning technology, which has moved on these days in the digital era, and makes it even doubly exciting. I want to talk about how we progress to where we are now, and probably a little bit about what the next phase might be as well. Well, since it's post-2015, and I'll just come back on this a second time, I won't spend my time on that. I want to talk about the utility, which is listed for 4.0, but I want to talk about what I call underpinning technologies anyway, because through various stages of development, there's been quite a few different underpinning or ubiquitous-type utilities. I then want to talk also about manufacturing. When I first left university in 1961, manufacturing was pretty close to 30% of the economy. Today, it's 6%, and still falling. Boy, it's become a bit over the last 4 months, you know. Why did you get that high? Why is it this low? And where's it going to go from here? And what does that mean for Western Sydney anyway? And then finally, I want to talk about just a few quick comments about the keys to success. How come so many of our companies don't last long, including SMEs, which you know that's pretty savage too. And it's certainly very likely to point out if you get them to survive, I think about 4 or 5 or 6 years, you've got a very good chance that they'll go a lot longer than after that. So what is the key to success? Which even our biggest companies don't know. Because our 100 biggest companies in Australia, which account for something like over 20% of the economy, only average around about 7% return on equity. Now you earn 10-12% to that property. Why would you have fear to earn 7% of that television? Which always makes a mockery in the newspapers and say, oh, Lord, will they pay the movie? Sometimes it's these 3 billion and 10 companies. They're not. They're not able to compete to a different group of customers. So I just want to finish with why we simply cannot make a decent bid in Australia, and we're going to have to if we're going to survive in this very competitive Asian region of the 21st century. Okay. First of all, new ages. That's a chart simply showing the growth of the economy in GDP terms, in real terms, of course, there's no inflation there. Over the last 130 years since we found the joint book of the office, we've heard about it first. It shows a particularly strong growth of the industrial age. You can see the dotted lines showing the various ages we've been through. The Utopian age, obviously the Agrarian age, which is very short in Australia because we kept it very short with the rich came. Then the industrial age, which is around about 1964-65. The new age days, which are the image I've listened for in the Tonic Age. And this one's one of a better term I've called Enlightenment Age. I know that's what was used in Renaissance, but I'll resurrect that for the next age as well. Because it's going to be a very exciting period. And his wife deserved to even do a mission this time and come back and see it. But, he's still ready to see it. He's just going to go on that trip, so I don't want to do that. I took it in red there, and I'm going to move very quickly. In red, I've been showing the underlying utilities that have supported each of those ages. Now, the only age that didn't have a utility was the hunting and trapping age. They hadn't even invented the wheel, of course, at that stage. The underpinning technology in the agrarian age, of course, was obviously transport in two forms. One, road transport in the wheel. The second was water, including sea travel as well. So there were two types of transport that underpinned the agrarian age, when agriculture, mining, and commerce were the kings. The industrial age was very clear, it was power. So that came in two stages as well, hence this term 4.0, which we'll come to in a moment. The power side, of course, was steam power and water power, and then converted electric power, but it was power that underpinned the industrial age. Turned ill this time around, we're in the Tonic Age, and this time it is ICT, information, communications, and technology. It's coming in two bits as well. First of all, it's like the original ICT amount is Lira, dominated by analytics, of course, and particularly by artificial intelligence, which is coming through like a Bondi train at the present time. My company is regarded as the world's most sophisticated online industry provider of information. I take no credit for that, only taking credit for starting the company, but executives have built it worldwide. We've been growing 20% per annum on stock for about 25 years, I suppose. And suddenly they're starting to slow down. Because artificial intelligence is coming in at a very, very rapid rate. We've been asked the question, when do you use artificial intelligence to write reports? And what can we do whenever you can? And then send the other time. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but it is simply phenomenal what this stage two, what the part visually is concerning. Not only the least sophisticated companies like mine, but two very ordinary companies doing very ordinary things as well. And we'll come back to that shortly. In terms of how our industry mix has changed over that period of time, you can see there what you won't know, but there's 19 industries on that chart. And the various colours can indicate what we call the primary sector, that's agriculture, mining, and the earth. The orange ones are what you do with the earth, that's for manufacturing. Utilities, like electricity, and gas and water, and of course, construction, so there are things you do with the earth if you dug up or whatever. And then the orange area is what you call the commerce area, that's the wholesaling, retailing, and transport. The green area is what you might call the quaternary or the fourth level, and that's to give you information and or finance or both. And the last one down the bottom is the blue area, that's called the quinary or the fifth sector, and that's more to do with more recently outsourced services. And of course, number one in there is health. You can probably know in Cameroon, given that 60% of economies in health, that's around about 9. I'm not sure that we suffer from being 9 to their 16, but there's certainly very sophisticated over there. That's where we've been. If we look at where we are today in place to those two issues, you can see how dominant the service industries are. And having said that, the one thing that I've got to point out fairly early in this piece is to say, every industry in Australia is a service industry, of course. Now, we refer to agriculture, mining, and manufacturing construction as within good industries. Well, of course, they're nothing of the sort. It's a very much a human or a commerce construct, only because you touch them. But if you get into the maximum counts, you'll never find any economist executive actually ever taking credit for creating iron ore, or sunshine, or water, or dirt. Either God made that or somebody did, but serving human beings had nothing to do with it. So all human beings can do is to create service that changes things, either pure services, as we might call them, or change what God gave us for nothing in something different. So even when it comes to manufacturing, usually people say, oh, God, you go to the manufacturing industry, you're really in serious trouble. Well, no, we're not. Really, when it's farmers shaped in the United States, it's just about 11% of their economy stuck in manufacturing. We've only got 5 or 6. Now, we've got 2 hires we've seen in a moment anyway, just protectionism, but we're doing an awful lot of that 5 or 6. We're still employing nearly 900,000 people, and we're still turning out more goods in sheer volume than we've ever done in Eastern Australia. So we're doing it simply with less. And in some cases, we've all been by cheaper imports in Asia than we've been doing as well. But we're essentially what we might call a tour services dominate in the form of that yellow, green, and blue area, and they're, of course, all the fastest growing ones. Some of the others do come back from time to time, like mining comes through, it's in its boom right now since 1998, and it will fade out by 2040. But basically, it's the green and blue areas that are truly dominant. Now, I want to make the point too about what creates an industry, because it's never been technology that's ever created an industry. It might have created itself, like ICT, but the only thing that ever really creates, well over 95% of all the jobs, is a term called outsourcing. We would never have agriculture if we still did our own food in the backyard, milk the cows, and whatever. We would never have a manufacturing industry if we continued to dad make the furniture or mum make the clothing or pick all the vegetables to preserve it. So manufacturing started with the inside and on to the 509 industries we've got today. And what's been driving this new age since 1965, since the industrial age, is been, of course, the outsourcing of the services, both from homes, companies, and from overseas. People won't be surprised to know that outsourcing services from overseas to us in the form of tourism will be a bigger dollar earner than the whole of mining before the end of this decade. And tourism will easily outstrip the total receipts from mining by that time. So we're living in a very fast-changing world, but even household services have created over 3 million jobs in the 30 million we've got today. That's outsourcing meals, etc. In fact, the reversion to sloth has been very important. It's a very underrated version of sloth, actually. And because when you resort to sloth, you actually have to get somebody else to do the job for you, which means you're putting them out of the unemployment pool. So you never feel guilty about outsourcing. It's doing it yourself if you feel guilty because you can go to prison for that. But seriously, outsourcing has created all the jobs in Australia, except the underlying utilities for the last 200 years. And we'll continue to do so for the next 100 years as well. And we should never, ever forget that in case we're finding it could, where you know, we think it belongs to this technology. My company exists where the world's largest online industry company in the world. We don't exist because of the internet and software. We exist because all the banks and all the other corporations have outsourced their own legal means to understand industries to us, as we can do it at a fraction of the cost and far more accuracy and much more quickly than they can. Technology is going to enable us to move that information to them in a much more quick and usable form. So we are probably one of the biggest users of IT teams that I can utilize with anybody in the world. We're writing software, we're saying we want to read a 30-page report in the industry, so it's been with I might only want one paragraph. You know, I can very fast get the software to be able to make sure all of our clients can have about 100,000 or in the world more, match what they want, which they want. So, I make the point though that you don't ever forget, please, that outsourcing is what creates industries, not technology. Technology underpins them and helps them grow very, very quickly. So when it comes to where continuing, you might be saying, what can we do with manufacturing here? And I'll come back to the choice when we're talking about it last time. But we've got to ask the question, what are we manufacturing for? Where can we compete? And what role then is the hyper digital era? And 4.0 in the okay, enough of that. This is what we've been outsourcing just since 1965. Just the household outsourcing is now over $500 billion. That's how much we've got. The average family now spends $53,000 per family outsourcing things they can do themselves in 1964. You might surprise me. So the big thing began to be ridiculous. That then you can use 48 hours later and say, jeez. I kept talking to my wife, we sat down at home and bloody murders to survive. And with the corporate outsourcing getting rid of all of the non-core functions of the amount of hundreds of thousands of jobs of course as well, millions in fact. Overseas has kind of been outsourcing to us, mining's really obvious, tourism's going to be the biggest dollar. And now the bottom line, and Courtney, we see this sort of new underpinning utilities that have emerged, which along with most of the day is 4.0. Now what about the new utilities? Well, as I said, it comes to the end of a lot of serious developments over the last 230 years in Australia. And I'll put a yellow arrow there, where the one that we're here to talk about, which is the 4.0. Because people talk about 4.0, it assumes that the world only started with the industrial age, and that's when you had the power in two forms, and you had ICT in two forms. There's in fact been 600 billion technologies over that, as we said earlier. But by God, this new one's very exciting, very scary in some cases. and the politicians know it. Now, all is known that the trouble with taxes is they ruin a good story. And data has never been as exciting as scandals, scuttlebutt lies, and all the rest of it. But the much more interesting, you talk to hours on those. Data is so boring, and surprisingly, it is boring. And so, what's happening in the present times is the pace of change, aided by things like social media and all the rest of it, has scared so many people that they're switching off and starting to listen to what you might call the old speaker or salesman. They've been around for hundreds of years. Worries me about some of those presidents, it's not if they voted for him, it's who voted for him, and there's so many of them, and that really is a worry. That really worries me more because it tells you that we're into a very serious stage in distance where, with a pause for breath to say, how on earth can you bring the people with you? There's none of our political leaders doing that at the present time, and so those that are winning in politics are those that are going down to a point where they're reaching down to low levels rather than lifting them up to a high level. That's what worries me. This is ICT utility, which of course stage two is what we call artificial era, or where there are digital disruption. The biggest thing that's going to be the consulting, and the biggest part of that's going to be artificial intelligence, writing, of course, and things like that going forward as well. And when it comes to manufacturing, it never would much matter whether you're making soft piece or you're making specific titanium blades or jet engines or something, you are going to have to use the power of this resource, 4.0, whatever you want to call it that way, to be competitive and to be productive. It's as simple as that. Nobody can really escape that at all. We often wonder why cabs were so disliked around Australia when Uber came along and we had to go to Uber. Recently, we have Mac, we know who's coming, when they're coming, and then we'll always match that up. But we can get a cab which we know whether it's using it or arrive. So, obviously, modern communications done properly. You can actually wipe you out if you ignore it. And, to see cabs and thought that plate worth $550,000 and they're worth nothing for much. It's an example of how you can be wiped out if you just don't see the signs there. We used to do a special report just on ES stores. We used to write one out to send to Left Australia, I think, for me, and that's all about internet since whatever it's going to be. So the quicker the dig there, even with a very simple industry, not just a very complex and highly skilled ones. Digital era, what the hell is it? Well, you know what it is better than I do, so I'm not going to go into that at all, but we use centered, sort of say, in that second paragraph, it's centered on big data, analytics, emerging artificial intelligence software. They're the four components that are really coming through like a bomb out of flames, as you said. Its impact is pervasive. I can not think of one island in 9 instruments in Australia that doesn't get affected by this. We did a very, very big job for IBM about 4 or 5 years ago. They wanted to know how many industries would be wiped out by the digital era. And surprisingly, we found very few. I think we only found 9 that would die over the next 10 years. Only 9. But the rest would begin to transform, if you like. I mean, Uber is transforming, if you like, the high car business without wiping out high cars. This would be removing one form of media to another. So it's not necessarily going to destroy a lot of industries, but it's going to destroy companies that don't change. Since the hyperdigital age, well, in theory, if you want to know, I'm not here to draw on details on the great extent, but you can see the sort of things in there that we're almost taking for granted these days, like cloud computing, workforce flexibility, the gig economy is emerging, it's all a bad thing. People would say that if they used to get all those doing things. And as far as things I get, it's so careful about these days as you get older. When someone says, oh, those industries have a lot of experience, I'm looking for wisdom, not experience, because some of those experiences are totally irrelevant to the particular job at hand. So we do have to be very careful about using that word experience. It just doesn't work. Because you might go, blah, 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 well, it's not your days. So you want to get with it, but so we've got some real challenges out there, and none of us can escape that challenge. Manufacturing. Just very quickly to reiterate what you all know, 4.0 simply is the fourth underpinning utility, or it's really two utilities in two parts. One, of course, is going back to where the first one was, say, referred to. The first one really was transport and conformance. The second one and third is, of course, what they call number one. And that, of course, was the creation of power, both the former Steam Water and the fishing. The second, the third one is really what we call the icing to the first stage, and then the second stage, of course, the hot music one. But that's the time we know some of the more there. Manufacturing, where's it been, where's it going? Holy Moses, the least of what's been to list. This is the manufacturing, it's a share of the economy. It started off very low. I mean, it started off from baking bread with the convicts around at the time and not much else. And you can see it rose to virtually 30% of the economy, not quite, but pretty close. It would never have gone up without protectionism, which was introduced in Australia in 1908. And we weren't the only ones that went protectionist, but we would never cost 30% of the economy without protectionism, which is why our decline was much steeper than most other countries around the world. Instead of America's already manufacturing is down very low at the present time. Will it recover? Yes, it will. It's going to get down to a reducible minimum. That won't happen any time real soon. The minimum probably not occur until sometime in the late 2020s. It's recovering at the moment, but you've got to remember that the exchange rate's down to 7 cents. It's going to get back to 90 and up to $1 in the next 5 years. So don't think that's going to be a permanent recovery. It's not. But it's a hell of a nice temporary relief from what's been a very sharp downturn. But we will recover. It's my bet that probably sometime before the end of the first half of the season, Australia will be the largest steel manufacturer in the world. Australia will give that away and give it back to Australia. And probably earn it in the market space anyway, doesn't matter. But we didn't do very well at steel because we know what we're doing. We've got our strategic assignments to do with the scale of all manufacturing, just as the minerals we did that way back in the late 90s. They did it. We don't know how to make steel competitively. But I'll tell you what, we'll know that by the end of the century, we'll put it on as well. So you can have a lot of industry space, but I won't employ very many people because they're going to be virtually mechanized. I went back and see my factory that I used to run in Bathurst, the Hill at Bursar factory. When I was running it as manager back in 1960s, there were 700 people. It's about 110. And you can't see a person inside of it, you know, living so much in the rest. So don't worry, we are going to we're going to get to the 30% or even 10% because of modern technology and partly because of the love this river. And we have massive outputs with very little inputs to continue to labour. This means we can break down manufacturing, and I'm probably very quick on that, but that's what that's what manufacturing looks like today. You've got to ask the question, if you've been working with Cindy, which bit of that offer the most promise, if you like, to emphasize in the very near future, and we might pick it up later. Always important to know that when it comes to a goods industry, so called, is that our oil dependence is in the middle of the chain, both on the suppliers and on the downstream as well. Maybe we're talking about that when it comes to Western Sydney as well. Very important when you look at Western Sydney and 4.0, what are winnable and unwinnable wars? Because winnable wars are very, very, very hard to win. So don't be the unwinnable one because you're going to be lost. So knowing what's a winnable war is one of the most important questions Western Sydney could ever ask, or a budding new entrepreneur can ask. If Western Sydney, Great Britain is known for 9% of the population of Australia, 7% of the GDP, so it's a bit understated in terms of standard. That's why they're 12% of all the manufacturing of Australia. So it's around about 12%, if you like, or 1/8 of 6 or 7%. So we're spending about just around about 1% of the total GDP of Australia. And that tells you that you're going to have to be highly focused to be successful. And some people are going to be really very sophisticated to take on exports and supply chains overseas. And in other cases, it's going to be up to world best practice to compete. And you'll finish on that, and yes, leave you one sharp job, but no time before, but otherwise, no one will be able to get. But if you can tick off those 12 questions with a yes, you will be making world best practice at 22% return on shareholders' funds after tax forever. That's what we do, and that's what we encourage all of our clients to do. The new world standard of profitability is 22% return on, which is 4 times the normal bond rate. And we don't earn anything like that. The average cost of Australia is 3.8. from 2000 and we're going to get about 8. We've got a lot of work to do to bring Asia and a lot of work in Western Sydney to make whatever means.